The emotion of fear often works overtime. Even when there is no immediate threat, our body will remain tight and on guard, our mind narrowed to focus on what might go wrong. When this happens, fear is no longer functioning to secure our survival. We are caught in the trance of fear, and our moment-to-moment experience becomes bound in reactivity. We spend our time and energy defending our life, rather than living it fully. And this week's opening quote comes from Tara Brach. Welcome to Surviving the Matrix, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Maxwell Egan. It's a pleasure to be with you once again, and I'll be your host for the next hour. Fear really is an interesting emotion. Fear, of course, being the opposite of love. It is a very interesting emotion indeed. And a lot of people write to me and ask me how I deal with the fear. A lot of people ask me how I maintain high energy levels while knowing all the things that I know. How am I able to come onto this show and speak calmly about very disturbing issues? And look, it's not always calm, folks. I don't always speak calmly, as I'm sure anybody who listened to last week's show will clearly understand. Sometimes I can get quite angry. In fact, I'm angry most of the time in regard to the things that I talk about on the show. It's just that I don't express the anger in violent talk or violent behavior. I channel the anger into something more productive and more positive, something that I believe may make a difference, and that is to come onto the show and discuss all of these issues with people out there who may happen to be listening. That's just what I do with my anger. But the question here is fear. How do we deal with the fear of what is coming down, the fear of the situation that humanity finds themselves in? And how do you deal with fear in general? For example, someone was speaking to me recently about our entry into Gaza Strip. When Ken and I went in there in 2012, the entrance into Gaza was not your normal entrance. It was actually through a very small rebel tunnel. And the people that I've related this story to have often said to me they would find it very difficult to do that because they would be overcome with fear at entering into the tunnel. And many of them asked me how I was able to overcome the fear. And what I said to them was I did it by becoming the observer of my actions. Because when you become the observer, you don't really have a stake in the outcome of what you may be observing. And when you do it all the time and you are constantly in a state of observation of your actions, almost as if it is a third party situation, then you find that there's no fear to overcome. Like when we were there at the tunnel entrance, I didn't have to suddenly put myself in third person mode in order to overcome the fear. I was already in that mode because I'm in that mode most of the time, not all the time. I mean, I do slip up, everybody does, and I'm just as human as everybody else. But the thing is that when you are in that observation mode, then you find that you can do most things without the fear. And you've got to understand what fear is as well. Because what fear is, as I said before, is the opposite of love. But what does that really mean? What does it really mean? What is the significance of fear being the opposite of love? I mean, is it just a nice thing to say, or is there something profound about that? And really, folks, when you look at it, I think there is something incredibly profound about the fact that fear is the opposite of love, because it gives you a better understanding of what fear is. And as a byproduct, it also gives you a far better understanding of what love is. And that's an interesting thing too, folks, because you would be surprised that many people simply don't know what love really is. Many people find love to be a very, very confusing thing. And that's true, folks. It's a word that we use almost every day, and yet it's a word that very, very few people seem to truly understand. Most people have this soft, fuzzy view of what love is, and very often it's a very detrimental and harmful view of what love is because it prevents them from doing all the things that they could do were they to properly harness this emotion. But if you really want to get down to basics of what love is, well, love is the opposite of fear, which of course brings us back to the topic at hand, namely fear. And also, folks, it's good to remember that there are different types of fear. There are some which aren't really fear when you look at them. Like, for example, if you were playing on the railway tracks and you look up and happen to see an oncoming train, you would likely jump out of the way. But then one needs to look at that action and say, well, is that an action born from fear, or is it simply an act of instinct, an act of self-preservation in the face of a clear and present danger? I mean, very often you'd find one would simply jump out of the way due to instinct in that sort of a situation, and they do so without even really thinking about it. And it isn't until one thinks about it, one looks up and sees the train and then thinks, oh my God, there's a train coming, and then they lapse into fear and they lapse into what was referred to in the opening quote as a trance-like state, whereby they become overcome by the fear and they get squashed by the train. But the thing is that when they look up and see the train, in that instant, are they overcome with fear, or do they simply allow instinct to play its course? Is that action born from fear, or is it, as I said, simply a reactive, instinctive response of self-preservation in the face of a clear and present danger? Because there is a difference, folks. One is strength born from instinct, whereas the other is paralysis born from mind. And they really are different things, and there really are different reactions to those two states, folks. As another example, about 20 years ago or 22 years ago, there was a situation with my ex-wife and I when we were in our car, and a bird spider had crawled into the car. And I don't know if anybody out there has seen the Australian bird spider, but these are probably the biggest spiders in the world. And this spider had crawled into the car and was on the inside of the passenger window of the car, and it literally took up the entire passenger window of a 1983 Holden Commodore. If anybody is an Australian, they know that car. They know these are pretty big windows. And it was hanging onto the chrome strip around the window and covered the entire window of the car. And my ex-wife was in the passenger seat. She thought she felt something crawl over her leg, but didn't pay any attention to it. And then she lifted her hand up to put the seatbelt on, and as she glanced to the left, she saw this giant spider on the window about 6 inches from her face. And she was 7 months pregnant at the time. And what she did, folks, was she let the seatbelt go from her hand, and she squeezed between the passenger seat and the driver's seat and got into the back seat of the car in less than 2 seconds. And I would defy a pregnant woman to even be able to fit between those two seats. But she did it in less than 2 seconds. She was in the back seat of the car in the opposite corner to where the spider was. And there's no way she thought about doing that. It was simply an instinctive, reactive response that suddenly put her out of the clear and present danger that she was in. So the question is that a reaction born from fear? And I suppose it was to a degree, but was it something that she thought about, or was it simply an instinctive response? Because I would suggest that it was simply an instinctive response and something that she thought about after the event. Now, as I said earlier, folks, I'm able to remove fear from my life and do the things that I do because I don't have a stake in the outcome. And that may seem a little strange to people. They say, well, you could do something and find yourself dead. Wouldn't you have a stake in the outcome then? Well, not really, folks, because dying is inevitable. That's what I'm going to do in this life. That is the one thing that is guaranteed that I will do at some stage during this life is die. Of course, it will probably happen at the end, and so that's not a problem for me, really. It's just when that end comes. But I'm going to die one day, folks. That's a given. So I don't have any fear of death in what I do. Of course, this doesn't mean I'm going to do stupid things, but I don't have any stake in the outcome of what I do. And I don't live in fear of what may happen to me. I don't live in fear of death or fear of the outcome of any situation. I just let the outcome go where it would. Of course, I'll attempt to steer it to a certain degree. But at the same time, I like to keep things a little bit organic and simply let things develop the way they will. But folks, when you get back to the whole concept of love and fear being two different sides of the same spectrum, then you begin to get a wider perspective of what love and fear is and what it means to be in a state of absolute fear and what it means to be in a state of unconditional love. Because neither of these two things are really what people perceive them to be either. But really, folks, if you get down to it, and you acknowledge that love and fear are simply two ends of a spectrum and that both are, in fact, connected to each other, then you begin to see what the relationship to each other is. Because what total fear is the complete lack of love. And what unconditional love is the total lack of fear. And in an attempt to help you understand what I'm saying here and to see this clearly, imagine that you exist in a reality where the only things that exist in that reality, the only things that you know, are paper and glass. Glass is one end of the spectrum and paper is the other. If you were to describe one end of the spectrum to somebody else from the perspective that all you know is paper and glass, then how would you describe glass to someone? What would you perceive glass to be? And what would you perceive paper to be? And really, because the only references you have are paper and glass, what you would perceive paper to be is not glass. And what you would perceive glass to be is not paper. You could even change the name of glass to the two words, not paper. And you could change the name of paper to the two words, not glass. And when you look at not glass as a thing in itself, this object is called not glass. Then you begin to see what I'm saying. You begin to see that what love is not fear. And what fear is not love. And once it really sinks in and you begin to see these two words as being the actual name of that state, then it's profound. It's truly profound when you see what it actually means to be in a state of unconditional love. It doesn't mean you're this warm, fuzzy, fake New Age person that pretends to smile and be nice to everybody when you really can't stand them. It means that you have no fear in your life. And when you have no fear, you find that you don't have problems with other people because all the problems that you have with other people are always born from fear. Always, folks, always, always are they born from fear. Sometimes we may not admit it to ourselves, but any dislikes we have towards others are in fact the product of fear. Now, this may seem a little cold to some people. Some people may be hearing this and saying, well, I love my dog and I don't see that as being in a state of not fear. It's this warm, fuzzy feeling I get and it makes me feel good and all the things that go when you're in a state of love. And I can understand that. I can understand what they're saying. I'm just attempting to put things in a kind of a black and white perspective so that people can begin to see how important it is to remove fear from their lives and what it truly means to be in a state of unconditional love. Because if you're not in a state of fear, if you don't have any fear in your life, then you don't do bad things. You just don't. People only do bad things because they're in a state of fear. People only steal from others because they're in fear of scarcity. People only hurt others because they're in fear of some aspect of that personality who they perceive may be a threat to them in some way. People go and hurt other people. A rapist goes and rapes a woman because he's in fear of his own inadequacies. It's all fear-based. All of this stuff is fear-based. Unless you're a psychopath, of course, who probably just does bad things and rapes women because they enjoy it. But that's another thing, and I'm not addressing that. I'm simply attempting to address the everyday people out there who find it difficult to remove fear from their lives. Because fear generally is what makes most people do the things that they do. The things that they do to hurt other people and the damage they cause to other people all stems from fear. We may not admit it to ourselves, but ultimately it is. It's all fear-based. And if you remove fear from your life completely, then you are by default in a state of love. It's as simple as that because you're only operating on one side of the spectrum. But the removal of fear can be highly beneficial, folks. It has really helped me. I mean, if I hadn't removed fear from my life, I certainly would not have had a combo treatment while I was in the Amazon recently. When I say a combo treatment, I actually had three combo treatments. And combo is an interesting thing, folks. If you have not heard of combo, it's actually frog venom, and it's an amazing thing that can do wonders for your health. And I've actually noticed a huge improvement in my life and in my overall health since doing a combo treatment. I'd like to talk to you a little bit about Kumbo and explain to you what it is, actually, as a bit of a segue into another topic. But I have to admit that I've noticed a huge improvement in my life and in my overall health, and it's also been noticed by many of my friends since doing a Kumbo treatment. And bear in mind, folks, I had meningitis last year, and meningitis is a very, very slow recovery. And I'd kind of forgotten that I'd had meningitis, and when I did the recent trip over to England, it really, really took it out of me to the degree that I was seriously wondering whether I was going to be able to be doing any more long-haul trips, because I just started to think, well, maybe I'm getting too old for it. My body's just not bouncing back anymore, because it really, really took it out of me. And I had been so run down from meningitis for so long that it just became the norm for me. I just thought, well, I'm always tired, I'm always run down, I've never got any energy, and this is just the way I am. And it gets to the stage where you've been sick for so long that that state of sickness becomes your normality. And that's the way it had gotten for me. And I didn't actually realize how sick I was and how run down I was until I had the Kumbo treatment and felt so different after the treatment. And as I mentioned before, folks, what Kumbo is in fact frog venom. It's actually venom from the most toxic tree frog in the Amazonian rainforest. This is just the way they are, folks. They have some bizarre jungle medicines and some bizarre jungle remedies. But some of these remedies that they have are incredibly effective, folks. In fact, they are often far more effective than Western medicine, these so-called massive advances we've made with the pharmaceutical industry and the chemicals and toxins they pour into people. These are not effective cures, and they often cause more harm than good, whereas the natural remedies that can be found in the Amazonian rainforest do exactly the opposite, folks. They just heal you, and they don't have any of the negative side effects that you see from the pharmaceutical industry. Even ayahuasca, folks, I've seen some incredible healings happen with people just using ayahuasca in the Amazonian forest, and I've had some incredible healing experiences during ayahuasca ceremonies myself. But getting back to Kumbo, Kumbo, as I said, is actually toxic frog venom. And the way it's applied, folks, is actually quite interesting. During a Kumbo ceremony, what happens is you will first sit down and you'll drink 2.5 to 3.5 liters of water in about 20 minutes or half an hour. And I'll tell you, that is probably the hardest part of the ceremony, trying to get 2.5 to 3.5 liters of water into your stomach and not bring it back up again is quite difficult when you're trying to do it in a period of 20 minutes. But what you do, folks, is you consume that amount of water, and you need to have that in your stomach. And then the Kumbo is applied by burning a series of holes into your arm. I had mine done on my left shoulder, and the shaman burned 4 or 5 holes down my arm, and then they scraped the epidermis off the top to expose the dermis beneath, and then they apply the frog venom to the little holes that they've just burnt in your arm, which puts the venom directly into your bloodstream through the muscle tissue. The Kumbo then goes into your blood and goes straight through your muscular system, and it gives you a very, very uncomfortable effect that you have just been poisoned by toxic venom, which of course is not really a surprise, because that's exactly what has just happened. And I did actually get quite sick. In fact, I was completely immobilized, a complete loss of all muscular control. I was virtually like a dead body on the floor, only I was fully conscious. And what the Kumbo does is it goes through your muscular system and it binds to all the toxins and heavy metals and any bad stuff that's in there, and it pulls it directly out of your muscle system into your bloodstream, and your immune system then of course freaks out completely that it's got all these toxins in your blood, and it dumps the entire load into your stomach, at which point it mixes with the water in your stomach and you purge the entire toxic soup back out. Quite violent vomiting, folks, but I tell you, the amount of healing that comes from this is simply amazing. It simply defies analysis, folks. There are literally no words to describe the amount of healing that I received from this treatment. I mean, I think I would have had to have done a 2 or 3 year detox diet to have got what I got in a 40-minute Kumbo ceremony. And I did 3 ceremonies within a 4-week period, which is apparently the way it's supposed to be done. And the results have been absolutely remarkable. even when I came back to Australia here, many of my friends have commented that I actually look younger than before I left. And another one of the side effects of this combo treatment, folks, is that it actually supercharges your immune system. I've spoken to people that have had combo treatments 5 years ago and simply haven't gotten sick in the last 5 years ever since they had the treatment. And folks, when I came home from the Amazon, even after one combo treatment, there is a masseuse who comes to visit me once a week. And I'm sure she's probably listening to the show as well. So I'll send a quick hi out to Polly. But Polly comes to see me once a week. And for the last 6 months or so, she has been attempting to get all of these knots and toxins and stuff that's been stuck in my muscles out. And when I came home from the Amazon and got on the table for a massage, she could not believe the difference in my muscular system. She said all of the knots and blockages that she's been working on for months that have been locked deep in my muscles that she's been attempting to get out, she just said all of them are gone. She said it was like massaging a different person. It was like a different muscular system to the one that left Australia. And that was simply from doing a combo treatment. There's also a friend of mine who was put on psychotropic drugs by the government last year. And he was put on these drugs for 3 months. He managed to wean himself off the drugs. But since that time, he simply has not been able to feel emotion. He's just been pretty messed up from what these things do, which is, of course, what Big Pharma is all about. And I gave him a combo treatment, and he noticed an incredible difference in his life as well. He was actually able to start feeling emotions again, and that was from just one treatment. So it really is quite a remarkable substance, folks. And it's actually a very interesting story how it came about and how this treatment was discovered. And actually, I'd like to share that with you because it is a fascinating little story. And I think it happened in Brazil. I may be wrong, but I believe it was Brazil. There was a village that was very sick and they'd been sick for months. People were dying and the medicine men and the shaman could not find a cure for what it was that ailed these people. They tried everything. They tried all of their plant remedies and all of their medicines and nothing had worked. So what happened was 6 or 7 shamans sat down together and they all drank ayahuasca and they asked the plant spirits to teach them how to heal the people of their village. Each one of the shaman who participated in the ceremony that night had visions of a frog, and each one had a different vision and a different aspect of what they should do with this frog. But eventually, after the ceremony, when they did integration, and they all sat down and they spoke about their experiences to each other, they put it all together that each of them had a piece of the puzzle, and that what they needed to do was to go into the jungle to find the giant tree frog, to catch tree frog, to hold it down and poke it and tickle it a little bit with some sticks until it released venom on its body, because this particular frog exudes venom through its skin. And they were to collect the venom and they were to take the venom to the stricken people. They were instructed that these people must consume a certain amount of water and that they were to apply the venom directly to their muscular tissue after burning little holes in them to expose the dermis. And so they went and they took this information and they performed this treatment for the people of their village and they cured the entire village. And that was how the medicine came to be. And I find it quite remarkable that the information was given to the shaman via a series of visions that they received during an ayahuasca ceremony. And that may sound pretty out there to a lot of people, folks, and you may get this strange vision of these voodoo witch doctors sitting in the jungle taking strange plant medicine and then being told to go and infect people with frog venom. And I guess that's what it is. But the remarkable curing properties of this venom when applied in the right way really does stand as a glaring testament to the accuracy of what was imparted to them in these ayahuasca visions. And I tell you, folks, the effectiveness of this treatment is absolutely unparalleled. And I really do recommend people look this up. Of course, it isn't something that you would do at home by yourself. Ladies and gentlemen, you need someone who is experienced to be able to apply this medicine to you and to sit with you while you go through the process. But if you can find someone that is able to do this, I highly recommend that people do it. But having said that, please do not expect a pleasant experience because it is anything but pleasant. when the combo is applied, you do feel like you have been poisoned. And the first thing that goes through your mind, well, the first thing that went through my mind was, oh my God, why did I do this? But it really is something that is highly beneficial, and the healing properties are absolutely remarkable. And if you want to look it up, just Google Combo Cleanse, and you should find a site that'll tell you all about it. And Combo is spelled K-A-M-B-O. So just look up Combo Cleanse, and I'm sure you will find something about it. But we did do some remarkable healing with this substance while I was in the Amazon. I've also seen some remarkable healings take place using pure cannabis oil in the Amazon as well. And the healing center that is owned by my friends, which is actually called Nimiakaya in Peru, actually also does a lot of work using MMS. And they have actually had remarkable results using MMS in various Shipibo villages through the Amazon. And that's something else that people could investigate as well, Jim Humble and MMS. This, of course, has been around for quite a while. I've been using it for at least 4 or 5 years that I can remember, and it is another remarkable health treatment which simply boosts your own immune system and enables your body to be able to heal itself. And that's an important thing to understand with MMS, folks. It doesn't actually cure anything. It simply oxygenates your blood and allows your body to cure itself. And even with Combo, what Combo does is it fully activates and supercharges your own immune system, really. And that is how the healing takes place, because all of the problems that we face and all of the inner problems and outer problems that we have in both our bodies and the world can be cured by we ourselves. We can cure ourselves of most of the ailments we get the same as we can cure the world from its ailments. All we have to do is apply ourselves in the right manner. But look, I think we're at break time here, folks, so I better leave it there for now and we'll go and have a break. Thank you very much for joining me on the air today. It's always a pleasure to have your company, and I'll speak to you again in a few minutes. Thanks for listening. And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. So, yeah, look, getting back on topic a little bit in discussing emotion and health, well, both of these things affect each other very much. Of course, your health affects your emotions, but many people fail to realize that their emotions also affect their health. If you are in a state of fear and stress all the time, it's very, very bad for the organism, and things simply don't go right in your life, and things don't go right with your health. You find you start developing all sorts of ailments. Whether they are fictional or not, you'll find that your mind makes them real and your body manifests them as real simply because you are in a state of fear or stress. And this is what happens. And this is another reason why it is extremely beneficial to remove fear from your life. And I firmly believe that people find it very difficult to remove fear from their lives because they don't truly understand the true concepts of love and fear. They simply don't understand what love and fear truly are. But the fact of the matter, folks, is that love and fear are simply two sides of the same spectrum, and that once this is understood, then people can change their lives in a positive way, and they can change their environment in a positive way because they are able to have a positive effect on both themselves and their environment by approaching things from the correct emotional state. And God only knows that this entire system that we are enslaved to at the moment is able to perpetuate itself solely via the fear that is placed into the public psyche. The fear of everything, you know, the fear of terrorism, the fear of disease, the fear that their health may be compromised, the fear of looking after themselves, the fear of fending for themselves, which of course instills the belief into people's minds that the world is a very, very dangerous place and that the only ones who can look after them is government. When, of course, it is the government that is creating all the problems to begin with. The problem, of course, is that in dealing with these problems, people are always looking for little personal remedies to keep their own little personal habitats safe, but they're very often not looking at the bigger picture. Many people don't seem to realize that what is needed is to free the entire human race. That's the only way to make any individual safe, is to make sure everybody is safe. And the only way we're really going to do that is to start calling things for what they are. And of course, the only way that is going to happen is when people lose the fear of doing so. And of course, they also need to lose their fear of others so they can put down all the baggage that they're carrying and put down all of these feelings of animosity that they seem to hold towards others, all of which are a result of this system. Anyway, most of these ideas are other people's ideas that have been instilled into people's minds. Most people judge themselves poorly and they judge other people poorly simply because they're judging themselves and everybody else according to the parameters of the system, which again are not their parameters. They're not their idea. This is just a concept that's been instilled into people's minds. And once we put all that down and we put down our political correctness and our fear of calling things for what they are, then we will make some change very quickly. But that's the way it has to be done, folks. We've got to really stand up for ourselves and we've got to stand up in honesty and integrity, put down all of this fearful reality that's been foisted upon us and start simply speaking the truth in both our words and in our actions. We do that, folks, we will see some change happen very quickly. And I believe that when people start doing this in a public enough manner, it will create ripples and it will create a groundswell. I mean, folks, I've created enormous ripples just by doing it on air. But if other people start doing it as well and we start doing it on the streets and in our local communities, then it will make a difference. And again, folks, I've done it here. I've seen huge differences that I've made with the people that I know simply by putting down political correctness and calling things for what they are. But again, while doing so, not doing so from a state of hatred or fear, I mean, you've got to do so from a state of integrity, but just don't bother being politically correct in what you do. Just speak the truth. It really does make a difference, folks. And if we all start doing it, then you'll find the government has nowhere to go. And you can start doing this. You can begin to make these changes in your lives and you can begin to really push the envelope forward and really make a difference when you begin to understand the true reality, the true nature of love and fear, and you begin to feel what these two emotions really are, what they represent, and how the emotion of love can be harnessed and used in a very, very positive way. And again, folks, I'm not talking about this fluffy New Age concept of love. I'm simply talking about total integrity and a total removal of fear. I guess, folks, what I'm talking about in many ways is simply embracing the warrior spirit, because that is what is needed. And of course, one of the ways to be able to do this, folks, one of the ways to be able to put down the fear and to stand in integrity and simply speak the truth and call things for what they are is to regain control of your health, which is what is wrong with this system as well. The very food that we eat within the Western system is designed to keep us in a dulled down state of awareness, in a dulled down state of motivation, because the food is not nutritious, the environment is not nutritious, it is not nurturing, and we end up in very, very stressed out, rundown states, and we simply don't have the energy. And this puts us in a very, very uncomfortable position, and we become fearful just by default because of the diets that we're subject to in the West. I tell you, just going and staying in Peru for 5 or 6 weeks and eating healthy food and doing the combo treatment, you come back out of the jungle feeling like a warrior yourself. You feel healthy, you feel whole, you feel clean, and you feel like you are able to take on the world. Well, that's the way I've been feeling anyway, folks, and that is what can happen when you begin to take control of your health again. And you're not going to get control of your health within the Western system. I mean, you can be eating all sorts of foods that they tell you are good for you, but unless you're eating healthy organic food and breathing clean air and drinking fresh water, you're never going to reach the pinnacle of health that you have the potential of reaching. Isn't it interesting how they promote exactly the opposite of that within Western societies? I was reading an article a couple of months ago where they were suggesting that those people who are fussy about what food they eat and insist that they must eat organic food are actually suffering a mental disorder. That's an interesting thing, isn't it? If you want healthy food and you don't think GM is good for you and you're not interested in eating food that's full of chemicals, then you have a mental problem. That's the way they promote it, folks, and that is exactly what's wrong with Western civilization. These systems that promote this type of herd mentality and suggest that anybody who is actually concerned about their health but is actually approaching it in a non-government approved manner may be a threat to society, may have a mental problem, and these people need to be vilified and ostracized. This, of course, is done to squash any critical thinking, any independent thought completely out of existence, and to make sure that everybody thinks within the government-controlled box that they want people to think within. And what prevents people from seeing this? What prevents the general population from realizing this truth? Well, again, folks, it's generally fear. The type of fear that creates cognitive dissonance within the minds of people, and they simply cannot bear to face the truth which is apparent all around them. That also is a big problem with Western society, folks. Cognitive dissonance. A lot of Western society is this way. And there are people who are half awake. There's a lot of people in the West who know there's something terribly wrong with their government, and yet they still support the war on terror. They still think we're being threatened by Muslim extremists all over the world. They still think ISIS is an Islamic-run operation, when in fact it's an Israeli-run operation. They still think that Al-Qaeda is real. They still think Osama bin Laden carried out the 9/11 attacks. And this is, of course, all ridiculous, because nothing of the sort happened during 9/11. Osama bin Laden himself said that he had nothing to do with it, nor did he approve of it. I mean, for God's sake, 9 of the 19 hijackers are even still alive and are complaining about not having their faces removed from the FBI website. So it just goes on and on. There's so much to show that 9/11 was staged, and yet many people still flatly refuse to see the obvious. People are unable to see the truth and simply will not look at the truth or view the world in a different way to the way they are used to viewing it. Because of cognitive dissonance, they are simply too scared of the reality that that view would bring. Many people simply cannot bear the thought that their governments are actually as evil as they are. Many people cannot bear the thought that the governments and the banking cartels and that the people who are in positions of power on this planet would actually do the many things that they do. But the fact of the matter is that the very state of the world indicates that they would, folks. They would, they do, and they are. And that's something that people simply have to come to terms with, because until they do, we are not going to be able to effect any positive and lasting change. But again, even though there are many people who remain in this state of cognitive dissonance, there are many others who are awake. The problem we've had up to this point has been coordinating some sort of response to the situation at hand. That, of course, is what we're trying to do with Full Circle Project, is to coordinate some sort of a response, a full-spectrum response against the system of full-spectrum dominance that the criminal elites are attempting to impose upon mankind. And the key to combating this system, folks, again, is simply calling things for what they are. And you're not going to do that until you put down the fear. You're not going to put down the fear until you get healthy enough to want to embrace the warrior spirit. And there's a real need for us to do that. We have to address this situation, ladies and gentlemen. And the Full Circle Project is really coming along in leaps and bounds. A lot of people are signing up to the Community Connector. I got a message from someone on a video the other day in Cyprus who is hoping someone else is going to sign up in Cyprus. So if you're out there living in Cyprus, please do go to fullcircleproject.net and sign up to the Community Connector and start linking up with people in your local area. And you can do this anywhere around the world, regardless of what country that is, because the Community Connector works for the entire global community. We can link all of the awake people up into a cohesive, coordinated, full-spectrum response based in integrity, honesty, and outspoken truth. And we will bring about some change, folks, because when we start doing that, we're going to find that we wake up a lot of the sleeping masses in the process. That's the beauty of the project, and that's the beauty of approaching things in the correct manner and in using a language that the people on the street can understand. And that, of course, is exactly what the Full Circle Project is all about. It's a project without leaders. It's a project where the people lead themselves and do so from the correct perspective and create a full spectrum across the board spearhead approach aimed directly towards the head of the snake. And that's all we need to do, folks. We need to coordinate our actions. We need to stop addressing symptoms and address the root core of the problem on this planet. And we need to do it in mass. So do go and sign up to the Full Circle Project, folks. Again, the website is fullcircleproject.net. And what we've got happening on the website, folks, is a whole bunch of different sections that you can go and get involved in as well. And one of them is about health, of course. And we're going to have all sorts of things in there. We want the site to function as a resource hub for people. But of course, this is going to depend on you as well, because all the resources can't just come from us. We need to know what action people are taking. We need to know what is working and what isn't working. And this information becomes our resource. And it is, in fact, an integral and essential part of the resource hub. We've got to have people putting their input in there and letting us know what's going on in their communities and what's working and what isn't. We want to have a section concentrating largely on health as well, where people can find out about things such as combo, MMS and ayahuasca and things that are beneficial for their health. People can find where retreats may be that they can go to. People can find out how to cure themselves of addictions and all sorts of stuff. We recently cured someone of OxyContin addiction at the retreat that I was staying at in Peru. Again, this is a retreat run by a friend of mine, and the name of the retreat, if you're interested in going there, is Nimia Kaya. This used to be named Tierra Vida, but now it is called Nimia Kaya. There's another site that you will find that calls itself Tierra Vida, but this is not anything to do with my friends, so please bear that in mind. And when I'm in Peru, which I will be from November, it is at Nimia Kaya that I will be staying. So if you are interested in coming down, you'll find me there at the same time. But we recently treated someone at the retreat with cannabis oil, and we were able to cure an OxyContin addiction. And we documented the entire thing. We're going to make all of these sorts of resources available on the website as well, including documentation with MMS and all of the health benefits that can be gained from using this substance. So anything that you've got out there that's working, we need to have this as part of the website. And any local action group you've got, you can bring under the umbrella of the Full Circle Project, and you can keep your own thing going, but you can use the Full Circle Project to link up with other people in your area and link all of these groups up together around the planet, so that when we do take action, then it is global action. That's what we need, folks. We need a united global action, but a peaceful action. We don't need violence. We just need people that are prepared to stand up and call things for what they are, and who are prepared to actually move it forward from that point as well. Not just stand up and call things for what they are and leave it there, but to start rallying the community to take action to address this situation. Because I firmly believe that if we do speak in a common tongue and in language people can understand, then people will rally to the cause, because everybody can see that there's something wrong now. They just don't know what to do about it. Well, with the Full Circle Project, we can figure out what to do about it. And I'm sure there are many people out there with a lot of good ideas to bring on board now. I've even got a few myself. And speaking of myself, folks, I'm actually home in Australia now. I'm no longer in the Amazon. I'm in Australia for at least the next few weeks. I'm trying to organize a journey to Gaza Strip. I wanted that to happen in August, but I've been informed that it's going to cost way too much money to get there in August. But if I leave it till September, then I can probably use the ticket that I've already had sitting there for the last year. So that's what I'm going to do, because I certainly can't afford to get there any other way. But I've got some speaking dates here in Australia as well. I'm actually speaking in Byron Bay in late October. And I think there may be a talk that is happening in Brisbane sometime between now and then as well. So I'll keep you posted on that one. If you're anyone that is in Australia, then those are two places that I will be speaking. It'll be the Freedom Summits in Byron Bay. I'll be speaking there with Ken O'Keefe and a whole bunch of other speakers. I'm not actually sure who's on the menu at this stage, but that will be taking place, I think, from the 23rd to the 26th of October, somewhere around there. And as I said, there may be a gig in Brisbane. I'll keep you posted as to where that will be. And I'll also be speaking at the Acapulco conference in Acapulco, Mexico, around about February 14th to 16th in 2016, I think, as well. So if you're anywhere near Mexico, it would be good to catch up. That's probably about as close as you'll get me to the United States at this stage. So that's just a couple of dates you can pencil in your diary. Should you be in the vicinity of any of those events, it would be great to catch up with you and say hi. But I continue to do these speaking dates, and I continue to do the radio show, and I continue to make the films, simply because I really do honestly believe that we can change things. I really honestly believe that we are at a time of great opportunity for all mankind. I really do. I think the human species has actually got its foot in the door of what may possibly be freedom. And it's the first time we've ever had this. Well, it's the first time that I can find anywhere in human history anyway. I can't find any place in human history where the human race was actually free. I've found tribal cultures that are still free because they live in the jungle. They've never been contacted by civilization. And you can see that these cultures are free. They may not have the best lifestyle, but at least they are free to a certain degree. We are messing the planet up around them, but they are still free by any standards that we would consider freedom anyway. But it hasn't happened for the majority of mankind. We've never really been in a position where we've been free. We've never had the opportunity for freedom. And even when we have had these opportunities, we've taken the wrong approach. And we've always lapsed into something violent. We've always ultimately brought about the same situation that we were in. And we've done this because when we've had these revolutions in the past, we simply haven't been spiritually aware or emotionally mature enough to deal with freedom. We've always appointed a new ruler and looked for a new nanny to look after us. We've always complained about the state, but we always wanted the state to fix the problems. And once we have got the state to fix the problems, then we want the state to manage things for us and look after us. And we just start the cycle again till it gets to the point where the state is overmanaging us. And then we start complaining about the state and we have a revolution and begin the process again. But it's never worked. And it's never worked because, as I said, we've never really been emotionally mature enough or spiritually mature enough to make it work. We've never really been in a position where we could deal with self-governance, and we're certainly not in that sort of a position now. We couldn't deal with self-governance on a whole, generally speaking, even now, no matter how much many of us would like it. But self-governance is what we need, so what we have to do is find a methodology by which to rein this system in, to stop it in its tracks, rein it back under control, and then re-educate the people in order to lead us back to a point where we are capable of self-governance. And that may take a generation, it may take two. Personally, I think it would only take one and a half. Certainly, I don't think it would take any more than two generations. But that's the way we need to do it, because if we do it that way, we can save the entire human race. We can save the entire species and the entire planet. There's no good just collapsing the system now and thinking we're all going to be free and self-governant, because it's not going to be that way. It would simply lapse into chaos and a great many people would suffer, and that is not a viable path to freedom. It's not an intelligent path to freedom. It's not a compassionate path to freedom. We have to find something that is all three of those things, and I think that it can be done. I really do. I think that there is a way through this if we can unite the people to a coordinated action, at least a coordinated dialogue. I mean, let's just start that to begin with. Let's get everybody together and start some dialogue, because that's what we can do with the Full Circle Project. It's just a mechanism, folks. It's a mechanism with no leaders, but it's a mechanism that we can all use and a tool that can benefit mankind greatly if we all choose to get on board and actually put it to use. And that is my great hope. And like I said, folks, we're seeing a lot of progress with it. We're seeing a lot of interest in it. A lot of people have been signing up, and the website is coming along very well, and it's only going to get better, and I'm really looking forward to pushing this project forward over the coming months. And just imagine it, folks. Imagine what we can achieve if we all put our heads together and act in a respectful, coordinated manner. Respect is the key, of course. We need to respect each other's ideas. We need to respect the ideas that people offer. We really do. We need to respect ourselves enough to do that. That's the problem. People see other people's ideas as some sort of threat to them. It's really, really bizarre. But I think that everybody has a piece of the puzzle, and if we can find a mechanism by which to put all of these pieces together and act respectfully, then we're going to find a way through this. And we've got all the tools we needed to do it right in our hands right now. And that's what I'm going to be devoting much of the next 12 months to, ladies and gentlemen. I honestly don't know how much longer I'm going to be able to do these radio shows, to be honest. I just can't afford to anymore, folks. This is one of the reasons that I have to move to Peru, because I don't have any other form of income. I've spent most of my savings on attempting to wake people up in the last 8 years, and I simply cannot afford to live in Australia anymore. And donations are very few and far between these days. I imagine everyone's off buying flat earth books and stuff. And I am simply not able to afford to keep going for much longer. So I'll just play that by ear, but I've got to move to somewhere that's a little bit cheaper so that I can at least keep this message going for as long as people are willing to hear it, or as long as I'm able to keep it going, and as long as there are people that are willing to take the message on board and hopefully get on board, then I will keep going. But I'm just running out of resources, folks. So it's time to sell up and actually go over there for a while. I think I'll be over there for at least a year, well, 6 months, but I'll just have to see how I go from that point. I do intend to make another documentary, which I will, of course, put out for free, but it'll be interesting to see what the future holds from this point, because I'm now entering uncharted waters, although I suppose that's what life is, really. It's all about uncharted waters. Every day is uncharted waters, really, if you want to get adventurous about it. Of course, if we just work the same job and eat at Wendy's every night, then it's not very uncharted. But for me, most of my life has been treading uncharted waters. It's just that very often I've had a little more resources at my disposal than what I've got now. But it's all good, and I'm sure things will go exactly where they are supposed to go, and I'm sure the ride will be interesting whichever way it goes. But we're getting pretty close to the end of this show here, folks. We've got a couple of minutes left. And I really do appreciate what everybody has done for me over the last few years, the last 8 years since I've been doing this show. I really do appreciate those who have made contributions to the website and those who have helped keep me going, those who have helped keep the show going. I really do appreciate all the people who have come to the speaking gigs. I appreciate all the people who have sent me messages, all the people who have watched the YouTube clips and commented on the YouTube clips, all the people who have shared the information and have stuck with me over the last 8 years through the whole growth process that I've been through, because it has been a process of growth. That's what life is, folks. It's all about growth. And that has certainly happened with me over the last 8 years since Surviving the Matrix began and you began to hear my voice on the airwaves. It really has been an amazing ride, and I couldn't have done any of the things that I've done without the support of the listeners. I couldn't have got the message out to so many people. I could not have kept the show going for so long were it not for all that support that I received in the early stages of the show and the early days of the show. As I said, things are getting very hard these days. People have got their heads down too many rabbit holes, I think. A lot of people are being distracted from any solutions that may be offered. And it's been a bit of a concern for a lot of people. It's been a bit of a concern for many people within the alternate media, the amount of distractions we're seeing with people and the unwillingness of people to actually turn and face the system and actually participate in some sort of action. But there are still people now that want to get involved and are willing to stand up and make a difference. And that is wonderful to see. And it is truly what keeps me going. But again, thank you to all the people who have supported the show for all of these years. Thank you to all the people who've sent me kind emails. I'm sorry I haven't answered them all. I mean, I've got emails there from 8 years ago that I still would like to answer. It's been very difficult to keep on top of all of that. I've had so many things on, especially with trying to put the Full Circle project together. And folks, I'm probably the one who's done the least work on the project at all so far since it actually went live, because I've just been too busy. So I'll send out another thank you as well to core crew that are working on the Full Circle project. It's been a hard ride and it's been a long ride for all of us, but together I think we can make a difference, and I think we are making a difference. I think we're going to see things really start to move forward from this point. It's just debatable as to how long I'll be able to keep this show going, so that's what I wanted to get across to you. I mean, I'm not going anywhere just yet. I will keep it going for as long as I'm able to last, but we'll just have to play it by ear at this stage. But look, that is it for me, folks. I'm now completely out of time. I'm probably actually a bit over time. Thank you to anybody who has made a contribution to the website, and thank you to anybody who can. I will look forward to speaking to you again next week. Please take good care until then. In Lakesh.